you must respond on. I hope you'll be here in the next few minutes, because it will be better if you start to respond with all the questions.
I will respond to some of the question and ask my team to support in terms of some of the comments. Firstly, the audit findings, the CFO will cover that, in particular the irregular expenditure. Secondly, she will also cover during that time the 3G costs and the strikes, and also cover some of the shortcomings relating to the audit findings. Chairperson, I would also wish to comment on the labour broker matter. As per our target for the year ending March, we had an objective to make sure that the labour broker component is transferred out of our books, and we have contracted the employees directly. We have done that, and the CFO will cover in some way on the cost elements as she covers that. The the issue on rental status in terms of cost, it is correct that at the moment we have a number of contracts which are costing us in terms of rental from our property point of view. We have a plan to look at
CEO Honorable Stein at least is here. He can hear when you respond, so that when he asks his question he can eliminate the other ones who already responded. You can proceed.
Thanks, Chairperson. As I was saying, that we have achieved the migration of labour brokers to direct contracted staff within post office, which is a process we started last year. We are in progress to continue and finalise the relationships. It's part of the project which we had been updating the Parliamentary Committee on a separate line, but that we can present that we have managed to achieve as per the last year's financial year. There was a question raised around financial sustainability of post office and also the subsidiaries. I would like to confirm that as post office, together with the support of the board, we have developed a turnaround plan. The turnaround plan intended to ensure that the areas of challenges within post office are dealt with, firstly on the revenue side and also on the expenses side. I wish to also elaborate a little bit in terms of that and the impact thereof, starting with CFG being one of the subsidiaries. The report indicates that last year we had lost 50 million out of CFG. The turnaround plan which we have implemented come out of December indicates that we are more going to break even or perform a little better than just breaking even for CFG, which is a positive input coming out of the work which has been done. The work which has been done around Post Bank and the corporatization efforts includes looking at efficiencies which need to be built as part of the plan of the corporatization. the benefits will also continue to improve from the position where Postbank is at. The other area which is also a challenge is around mail, with the mail decline. I will ask, as a progress, the head of e-business to share some of the products which we have developed in e-business, the benefits which we have gotten out of those products, including the work we're doing on e-electronic bill and presentment and payment with the likes of Tswane and Ekurhuleni. And that will then indicate that the efforts which are coming out of the work, out of e-business. As a matter of indication, last year e-business had a turnover of about 100 million, and the forecast going forward is that that will double in terms of turnover. These are some of the efforts which are focusing on improving the subsidiaries. What the CFO will do also is just to comment on the loans and the loan arrangement for CFG. Chairperson, if I may pause there, just allow the, with your permission, allow the CFO to comment, and then I will then continue with the other subsequent questions. So as the carryover is not too confusing, and then as I proceed on to make more logical responses.
You can only deliver whatever it takes when you are logical.
Yes.
So it makes sense.
Thanks, Chairperson. She will start with the audit findings and the regular expense. She will then cover the loans, including the 3G elements of the cost.
Thank you, Chair. Just focusing on the audit issues raised by the AG, and the question that came is how do we prevent fruitless, wasteful, and irregular expenditure? Currently, we have a process going. We first had to go through a process of identification, and that's what has happened in the previous financial year and the year before, identifying all of the irregular expenditure. And irregular expenditure, by definition, means that where we have not followed a particular procurement process. So those are contracts that could have probably lapsed or contracts that could have been evergreen. So we've gone through that process of identifying all those irregular expenditures. And after identification, we also gone through a process of investigation to get it to a point where we are able to get those contracts condoned. Now, it's also quite comforting to note that that entire process and the quantification was the post office itself that actually identified those irregular expenditures, as opposed to it being reported by someone else that we have these irregular expenses. So that speaks to the controls within our environment. Now, after identifying those processes, after identifying all those irregular expenses, we are now in the process of ensuring that we have contracts that are regular, so that we don't find ourselves sitting with irregular contracts going forward, irregular expenditure going forward. As far as fruitless and wasteful expenses, and there I will touch on the comment on the 3G cards and how they relate to the strikes. The 3G cards don't relate to the strikes, but the penalties and interest relate to the strike. So when we look at that particular slide that we make mention of, that slide, and it's slide number 33, there's three bullets. There's one that speaks to 3G cards, there's one that speaks to penalties and interest, and there's one that speaks to rent that was paid for unoccupied property. Now, the 3G cards there, it's those that we've identified, again, through our own processes, identified 3G cards that were not in use but paid for. So now we are in the process of correcting this very mistake that has happened in the previous year so that we are not found foul again on the same issue. And that's where the 3G card issue comes from. If we can now go back to the labor broker and integration and the costs. Currently, the costs have remained flat because what we have done on conversion is the same rate that would normally be paid through the labor broker is paid to the employee direct. So that cost has remained flat when you compare it year on year. And borrowings for subsidiaries, currently none of our subsidiaries borrow outside. So what happens internally is where we use the same platform, we have a shared service arrangement, where we use the same platform, we use the same services. So, and that's where the financial support aspect comes from. So instead of CFG, for example, going out and hiring its own CIO, we use a group CIO. Instead of CFG going out and getting its own management accounting team and finance team, we use the same management accounting and finance team, so with marketing and so forth and so on, so that we are able to use that platform effectively and we don't duplicate costs across the group. And the borrowing that would happen then would be intercompany borrowings, not borrowings outside of the group. So with CFG, for example, does not have a loan with a bank. They would have a loan internally with SAPO. That is then, the payments are then determined within the group. I think that's where I need to end. Yes, because it's an internal arrangement. There is no stipulated time of payments, and this is common in group companies where you have a holding company having a subsidiary that it supports. It's quite common that when you issue them with a loan, you don't put through terms of payments because you are in the same stable of companies.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Thanks, Chairperson. With your permission, I will also put in queue the group exec responsible for e-business to comment on the developments which have come out of the efforts of e-business in the light of the declining mail, and also in the light of positioning ourselves as post office to deal with the challenges of e-substitution as part of our plans going forward. But Chairperson, if I may just start by commenting on the sustainability of the business and also the question raised around policy direction in line with the USO delivery. What I can say, Chairperson, is that in terms of the business position, the loss as incurred at 180 million thereabouts demonstrate the ability which business has focused itself from a cost and from a delivery point of view to improve the position against delivering of USO. It is in that light that we continue to look at how best we can substitute the decline in business, and that's where e-solutions comes in as a factor. However, our level of engagements with the regulator and DOC are on along the lines of what strategically could be beneficial against the loss of mail. In other words, we look into our engagement is along the lines of what is the volume of mail today and how best will we deliver mail and what is that which can be done to improve the position as we deliver our services. This will include options of whether if a six-day delivery is more appropriate versus a five-day delivery. But fundamental to these processes are around no reduction in service which we provide. So these are some of the discussions which are happening within DOC and the regulator. Further to that is to look at other modes which are benchmarked internationally in terms of what are the things you can do in terms of the framework on the cost of delivering with VSO. We have gone as far, Chairperson, of analyzing the impact and an understanding of what is the cost of VSO. So as when we look at solutions around the funding of VSO, it's more comprehensive, other than just looking at the bottom line loss. This will then bring the balance between the role of each business unit in the delivery of VSO and also the role of each business in subsidizing, in quotes, the cost of VSO. Probably the shareholder could comment in terms of timelines, but we are aggressively working on that to position ourselves better into the next coming year. Equally, one could extend that to, you know, what is that which we're not doing within CFG to position it better, given the online shopping. I can confirm that quite a quantum of the work which is done by e-business is really to leverage that. However, I also wish to highlight and emphasize the fact that CFG operationally has made strides in terms of going to a balanced break-even. What we're now doing is to extend the services beyond just online shopping, but to demonstrate our capability in terms of what we're doing. The head of CFG, Mulifa, will just share some of the benefits which have come out of the work which was done with the likes of Limpopo within Books and Books delivery to date. That being the indication of what we can do from a responsiveness, how timelessly we respond to a problem and how we provide a solution towards such a problem. The same work is being done with the Department of Health within Gauteng. This, for us, indicates that our positioning for responding to online, it's something which we're working on and we will definitely leverage that. The indications also to my introductory slide is that the segment of, you know, e-business is growing. Equally so, the backbone of that is our postal and distribution sector, which is very relevant to grow that market. Chairperson, I will also ask Mr. Nisindala to cover the deployment of mobile processes and approach, which will be more in detail, and also for Susan to cover on the report around the armed robbery crime and the disciplinary action which has been taken so far.
You know the store of Lukwati in the post office, where some of these clever people had decided to rob the post office. But they didn't know what is this PIT thing. They thought it's an ATM. So they break in the post office and stole a PIT, which was not functional anyway.
Through Chairperson, if group executive for e-business was to respond, followed by Dalam Nisi, followed by Mulife, and then Susan on the Amrok Press, and then we'll continue thereafter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, just to emphasise what the CEO has already said, the efforts here are to create an online business for the post office. I think the honourable member indicated that she's a very she uses the e-space to buy a lot of things. You will see in the next few efforts to actually accelerate the online activities access the post office products and services. We have thus far created quite a few as we are evolving: the hybrid mail solutions, the mobile communication solutions through the prime rated SMSs, the virtual post office through which you could buy stamps today and also pay traffic fines online, which is real time. We also, in the light of what the municipalities are doing today, they have adopted the strategy of actually sending MMSs and SMSs and online interaction with their customers. Thus, they will not therefore send their statements. So we have created an electronic bill payment and presentment platform through which billers could or customers could view their bills and pay their bills online real time. Thus far, we have worked with the Tswane municipalities, the Ekurhuleni municipalities, and we are in the Western Cape working with the Drakenstein municipalities. So all those are really efforts to try and migrate our traditional products and services online and also create new other services that our consumers today are looking for. Thank you, Chair. I've been just reminded, as an addition to that, the authentication services, being the first local developed authentication services in the country, that issues the digital certificates, various digital certificates, to protect data online and transactions and communications online through our trust center that is owned by the South African Post Office.
You see, Chairperson, I am tempted to say South African Post Office also is really an enemy to themselves. Why don't they profile their? Because there's so much that they are mentioning right now. But when you read their presentation, it's like it's doomsday. I think that you should take that very seriously.
Chairperson, as a lead member of the organization, I'll be first to acknowledge that the manner in which we probably bring forth the abilities of what Post Office has done and also the customers which are using some of the technologies. I'm sure the head of e-business will have indicated that the likes of FNB uses some of our services. It's some of the things we need to improve in terms of how we communicate ourselves and explain what we do from a service point of view. And I take note of that and will probably spend more time in really outlining some of the work we have done.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. In terms of the mobile post office unit, we currently have 4 units. The mobile units have the capability to provide all postal services. The first unit was deployed here in Cape Town for emergency purposes, but it stood here for a year at Porterville because the post office building burned down. That post office has been fixed now. We will be moving that mobile unit to the Eastern Cape in the Paddy area. One of the units has been moved to or deployed to Free State in Tabanchu, and the other unit is deployed in KZN. We will be using it around the Isindumbili Bini area, and one will be deployed in the Mpumalanga area around Siyabusa area. We have not yet really finalized the routes, because in order for us to use them, we need to engage the communities, inform them about where the post office will be providing services, and also to make sure that in terms of the security and the safety of staff, the communities in those areas can also assist us. So as soon as we finalize the engagement with the local communities in those areas where we are going to deploy this unit, we will start actually utilizing them to render services. We're currently in the process of also converting another 4 mobile vehicles to mobile post offices, which will also be deployed in other rural areas. The purpose of this unit really is to try to service those areas where we cannot, in terms of maybe the population of the area, establish a fully fledged post office. We're hoping that through the unit we'll be able to service maybe more than 3 or 4 villages in a particular area. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, I think it's my turn. And honorable members, I just wanted to address the issue around online shopping. Honorable Sheen, the issue of online shopping, we have been in that business for a while. We have, for example, in Cape Town here, On the Dot, which is the Naspers company. We've been doing their business for a while. There are quite a number of online shoppers that use our network. One of the major issues that we're trying to address, and my colleague has been talking to it, Mr. Ntuli, on the e-business side, is to ensure that we can also give you an online electronic POD, proof of delivery, even when the item is delivered to the post office. Because remember, on the courier side, when it's a door-to-door delivery, it's quite straightforward. We then get a POD directly from the person who receives it. Now, most of our online shoppers want to use the post office network because it's more convenient and far-reaching. And the challenge we've been having was to make sure that we can then get a proof of delivery even when you collect your items at the post office. We have been developing some systems in that regard to ensure that we can give the sender especially the comfort that you have received your items at the post office. And we are very far with that in that regard. The second issue I wanted to address, that the fact that the courier business is booming, to a great extent it is true. The key thing is that you need to be able to catch all the areas where the items are booming, and yes, online shopping is one of them. However, we're also cognizant of the fact that because of our size of network, some of these complementary areas of business are important, and hence I think the CEO was addressing the issue of movement of books. We're glad to say that our flagship was the Northern Cape, which unfortunately was quite small from our point of view in terms of business, but it has then translated into the movement of books in Limpopo. And I'm happy to say that the Honorable Minister of Education was out there looking at what we were doing, and we are hoping that out of these two flagships we'll be able to move books across the whole country. That will enable our business unit to carry the extra cost that we're carrying for being a national network provider. Secondly, the issue of movement of medicines. We are looking at Gauteng as a flagship to make sure that, remember, the medicine depots have been a major challenge in the movement of medicines. We are creating a cross-docking system that says within 48 hours from the time of delivery from the manufacturer, those medicines will be delivered to the hospitals. We are going to start with about 20 hospitals in Gauteng, and hopefully out of that, we've already started talking to the Eastern Cape as well in that regard to try and make sure that the network that we carry, which is vast, can actually help in these important service delivery initiatives. Thank you, Chair. You sit as a role in this committee. If you want to talk about provinces, Northwest must be part and Mpumalanga. Otherwise, don't say anything about provinces.
Thank you. Honourable Chair and members, I would like to then just respond to the question about the staff and the criminal investigations. The three highest reasons that we have for investigations currently is gross negligence, fraud and cash shortages. And of course, when we look at fraud and those kind of misconducts, we have a very specific focus also on financial misconduct, on which we have a special report, and we focus on that in terms of our future of the organization going forward. And what we have also done is we've put in place a financial misconduct subcommittee. We also have adjusted our policies and procedures to address some of these actions that we find employees do. We've got an ethics committee that also help us to look after the behavior side. We also have a crime buster hotline, and then we have a whole fraud prevention plan. What we have also found is that, if I can quickly quote numbers, for 2012-13 financial years requested, we had 606 cases that we investigated, of which we reported 82% to the South African police. It's a number of 494. Out of those cases, the final dismissal of employees came to about 15 to 17%. So I think that addresses the question.
The only reason, when you talk about your numbers, you are able to say 606, but when you come to dismissal, you say around 15 to 16%.
Yeah.
Is there any specific reason? I just want to check.
It is just that some of the cases have been referred to the CCMA, and so although we have dismissed the employee, because there's still a CCMA case, that you know, there's some people that come back. So that is where there is a fluctuation.
What's that, Chief?
Thanks, Mr. Chairperson. There is one comment which the CFO would like to cover on the increase in terms of employee costs.
The increase on employee costs, yes, the number is 214 million, but when you look at the percentage, it's 7%. And given the fact that during the 2012-13 financial year, we gave a 6% increase to employees, so the real growth in terms of employee base is that 1%.
Chairperson, I'm not so sure if I may have missed a question on the ones which were raised so far.
Okay, I will hear from the members if you have missed some of the questions, but I know Honourable Stain is the first one on the line, and other members. Oh, welcome, Honourable Kekana. You are most welcome. You can't contest with Honourable Kekane that I didn't welcome you. Honourable Stain, your questions, members, follow up, Honourable Soma, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to refer exclusively to the annual report when I pose the questions, and I'm going to try and skip the ones where there may have been an answer, Chairperson. On page 18 and 19, I just want to refer to the operating loss. Now, it's 206 or 207 million, but I think we're forgetting that we're starting from a base of a surplus in the previous year. So as far as I'm concerned, the total loss is in fact not 207 million, but 458 million. Well, we started with a surplus of 251 million, money in the hand. And now we're ending up with the 200, and your figure will show it, where you get your baseline, and then you've got the portion above that, and suddenly you're below that line. So it's that entire figure that, as far as I'm concerned, which is a loss. Now, one of my colleagues colleagues asked about the employee cost, which is in fact 57% of your operating budget. Now, I cannot see that you're going to move forward and get out of that hole unless you're going to start cutting that particular line item. Otherwise, it's just going to grow, and your revenue is not going to keep up with it. And you haven't come forward and told us how you're going to address it. I think in certainly last year, there were plans. You indicated that one of your priorities were to cut your salary bill. Now, that simply hasn't happened. And I think it needs to receive some attention, because you cannot if it's going to grow even by 1% every year, you're getting to a point where you're really going to look at your organization and that ongoing concern becoming a major threat and a reality. Now, one of the things that has been mentioned, and we mentioned it last year, and all my colleagues spoke about it, is the fact that you're losing the subsidy. It's not something that we didn't know a year ago or 2 years ago. We knew that, and yet I don't get the urgency from the entity about what you're going to do. You're still telling us that you're talking to Treasury and to ICASA. But this is a year later, and we're still sitting without the decision. So again, like the staff component, it needs to be given some priority. Now, I just want to get some clarity here. One of your social obligations is 50 new access points per year. Does that mean, and you've reached that target for this year? Is that 50 for the following year and the year thereafter and the year thereafter? Because at some point, I think the 50, if we couple it with a subsidy that you're not receiving, I'm hoping that we're going to reach a point where there's maturity in terms of access. And then that 50 will start falling away without negatively impacting on your social obligation. Then I want to refer to page 22. And this is your economic performance. Now, if you go from page 22 all the way through to page, 29, 31, I mean, all I see there is not achieved, not achieved, not achieved, not achieved. And this is economic performances. Is it any wonder that from an economic point of view that the entity is in trouble? If your targets here, your economic performance targets have not been achieved, it doesn't matter which one it is. Look at them. Look at page 22 there. There's not a single achieved on page 22. There's 1, 2, 3 on page 23. But you can go through those pages. So again, I don't get the sense, or as my colleague liked to say, a sense of comfort from where I'm sitting, that you're treating this urgent enough. I just don't get that sense of comfort.
If you can't beat them, join them.
Then on page 43, and the chairperson referred to it in her opening remarks, I was just looking there on committees of the board, and you mentioned the procurement task team. I'm a little bit confused. I'm not sure if this is a team comprised of employees. Are there members of the board on this team? Does this replace, and I'm assuming that the entity had a tender or a bid committee set up. So this procurement task team, if you can give me some more information, does it replace the tender bid committee that the entity may have? Is it in conjunction with that committee? Does it oversee the work that committee does? What role exactly? I got the sense that you said that it perhaps reviewed past contracts. Is it involved in future contracts, in current contracts? I'd like to know exactly what that procurement team task team does. Who it consists of? Are there board members on it? What do they give recommendations to the board? Have they been involved in cancelling existing contracts, or perhaps contracts that are supposed to be awarded? They cannot replace. I can understand perhaps as an investigative team, but I can't see them replacing a bid or a tender committee that the entity may have. So if you could just expand and tell me what exactly this team, and you know, do they have a shelf life, or are they going to carry on into the future? Then on page 55, I'd like for you to look at your risk register here. And again, if I look at this risk register, then I'm not surprised at
at the status of the entity. The IT infrastructure, the inherent risk is very high. Your control rating is weak. Look at those red blocks there. I mean, I don't have to repeat them one by one. Failure of internal control processes, governance risks, which is one of, again, and I say this to every entity, it's one of the basic principles of any business. And yet we all seem to get them wrong. Now, if we're going to get the basics wrong, what chance do we have of getting the more intricate stuff right? Page 67, important, the King III principles, which you yourself in your report refer to. I look at the 3.3 and 5.11. That's on page 67, as I've said, and I just want to draw your attention to it. So it's not new stuff. You are telling us this. We're not telling you this information. The audit committee should be chaired by an independent non-executive director. That's what the King III principle says. You repeat it here. And then you tell us the position is currently vacant. Yeah, I cannot help but shrug my shoulders. 5.11, and I'm just mentioning two of what I consider to be the important ones. The board should be responsible for IT governance. One of the things picked up by the Auditor General was in terms of your IT controls, where you got a negative against that. Now, the board members are here. You are responsible for IT governance. What is going on here? Talk to us. Page 92. I'm glad, sir, that you mentioned the medicines in Gauteng, because I've made a note here, delivery of school books and medication. But I think we also repeated this last year. When we were looking at alternatives, at how you can improve your revenue, we spoke about, because of your footprint, you should get involved in the delivery of school books. Now, I see you've done it in the Northern Cape successfully. We've got 9 provinces. So why stick to the Northern Cape? Why not get involved, which you are now doing? But it's a year later and you're telling me you're talking to the Gauteng Health Department.
I thought you are going to say you'll lead them to also in the Western Cape.
Well, they need to talk to us, and so that we can be the flagship. Come and talk to us. We'll do it. You know, we usually first out of the blocks when it comes to anything. The hybrid mail, page 115, and we've had some responses, Chair, but what I'd like to hone on there, and again, I'm glad that it's a new effort at enhancing your revenue, but what bothers me is this substantial investment in new production equipment, because I would imagine without investing in the infrastructure there, it's not going to be possible for you to increase the volumes as you think you're going to do. And I've made a note, I have no idea on what basis you've calculated that a substantial increase in volumes is expected. I think it's probably a little bit wishful thinking, but if you can tell me, do you have the capital to spend in new production equipment? Tell me which contracts are currently in place, perhaps to replace obsolete equipment. Are there contracts that have been initiated, but they have been stopped for some reason or another? Because without that, you're not going to realize this increase in volumes that you're expecting. I just want to, you've answered some of my colleagues' questions about the irregular expenditure. I'm curious about the condonation of it. And Chair, perhaps you need to assist us here. I'm under the impression Parliament approves your budget. When there's irregular expenditure that needs to be condoned, in other words, you must be forgiven and all is right, it gets done by SCOPA. I'd like to know who has condoned this and on what basis, and perhaps we need a separate report at a later stage. The motivation for condoning this, because we can't have this where we've got irregular expenditure and then somebody within your entity purely goes around and they condone it and it no longer exists. I can understand that the CFO said going forward you've put better processes in place. But the condonation, and I want to touch on two of them. You answered the 3G cards. Now, I couldn't pick up in your documents here that you recovered any money from anybody. That wasteful expenditure was condoned. Somebody ordered 3G cards with the intention of giving it to somebody else to use. That didn't happen. That money must be recovered.
can't just be condemned. Somebody paid rental for office space. It was standing empty. Somebody needs to be held responsible and accountable, and the money needs to be recovered, not condemned. So I'd like to hear about that. I am concerned that in the document there's a question mark against, and I think it comes from the audit committee, about your asset management, which is not in place. Now, again, I've read through this document, and I can't tell you what page it is, but you're busy with the Heritage Museum. And in putting that together, you have to find the assets and do an asset register. Now, if your asset management is not in place, how on earth are we going to finally come up with all the assets that belong to the Heritage Museum? I'm skipping some of the things, Chair, that I believe they've answered. I want to go on to page 131, 134, which I think refers to your own internal audit committee, and it's management reports. The committee has raised its concerns at the quality of management reports. And that's what it says, but it doesn't tell us what those concerns were. It does say now that they are satisfied that the reports supplied to the board are satisfactory. But I would think in an audit committee report you would actually state what your concerns were, so that you've got a record of what they were, and you can then satisfy yourself in the years going ahead that it's in fact now satisfactory. And while I'm on the audit committee's report and looking at this whole financial thing, I'd like to in fact put the question to the chairperson of the audit committee and the CFO. Can you tell us exactly what the financial status is? How did you fund that 200 and something million rand loss? Does it come from a surplus? From 6 billion? Or how much money do you have somewhere hidden away? Does it come from there? Do you have a overdraft? If so, how much is that overdraft? I would imagine that any entity has got an approved overdraft that's there for emergencies. Do you have such an overdraft, and how much is that, the approved overdraft? And how much, if you do have an overdraft with a bank, does that exceed your approved limits, or is it less than that? Do you still have access to some money? If you could just share that with us, please. CFG, and I've made a note of a reply here where the chief operating officer said something. The GCO said we are aggressively positioning ourselves to do better. You replied to a question about CFG and it's because they're losing money. And you said that they would be in a better position next year, going forward. Yes, they're going to break even. That's what you said. Now on page 136, you tell us that this is due to CFG's liabilities exceeding its assets. And at the next AGM, the shareholder will be requested for financial assistance for the year ending 2014. That's not break even. You're going to come to the shareholder, which is government, which is a taxpayer, and say, bail us out. When CFG should in fact be a profit-making organization, as the Honorable Shin pointed out. Then 178, I think somebody asked about the loans, and there was an answer about the loans. But the problem I have about these loans, which is quite substantial on 178, there's no collateral. And you're quite prepared to write some of it off. I mean, you've got total loans of 307 million. You've allowed an impairment of 266 million. So you're looking at possibly getting 41 million. If you're losing money, why would you allow this to happen? I mean, there's 307 million that you've loaned to these other entities within the big entity, as the CFO explained. But if you could collect that money, and every one of it says the full amount has been impaired, the loan is interest-free and there's no fixed term of repayment. You can't be going around lending money that you don't have. You would be in a positive situation if you could collect this money. And then something that I thought one of my colleagues would pick it up, page 195 and 213, bonus payments.
How do you justify bonus payments to an entity that comes before us that have made a loss of 207 million, or according to my calculations, 458 million rand? How do you justify paying out bonuses? I'm at the end, Chair. Lastly, you have spoken and questions have been asked about investigations into alleged corruption. I would just like to know if the shareholder has played any role in initiating in any of these investigations. Thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Lisoma. Honourable Trevor, follow.
No, thank you very much, Chair, for giving me another opportunity. And may I also thank the responses that one has received. Chair, I just want to make a follow-up on, I know Honourable State have raised this issue, but I'll raise it in my own way so that also I get the other angle. In terms of the subsidiaries' loans that we give them, is it in line with the good financial practices of PFMA? What underpins that? What informs it? Because if the CFO says that other companies, post office is not other companies, it's a government entity, so whatever environment it operates within government norms and standards. So I want to hear that. Secondly, on that one, will be, you know, if I was somewhere, I was going to say the Javelin administration management way we're doing things, because if they don't perform as they are expected, as Honourable Steyn have said, obviously all of us we know that, they're supposed to be financially sustainable, if not making a profit. If you look at the salaries of the main company and the subsidiaries in terms of the pay curve, it's not standard. What do we have a uniform, or it's probably our selective? I won't mention any level or category or individual in terms of the divisions or sections. But is it the pay curve, is it standard that we are using for the subsidiaries and the main company, which is the post office in this juncture? The other one that I would like you, because all of these things also borders, which Honourable State in terms of the board members, is the Risk and Audit Committee is vibrancy and being alive in terms of the issues. Third one, Chair, is based on the response of the mobile officers, which is good. And also I'm happy that KZN is covered. Is it okay, even the e-service that we provide, the transformation in terms of the service, how we provide the service, is it informed by the, we have done a profiling of our customers? What informs that? Why I'm raising that, because we always talk about from this side the issue of universal coverage vis-a-vis the population and the landscape. That does it balance? Because all the time, all of us, we get tempted to talk about the distance and also the population. I know, CEO, you'll remember, even last year we raised that thing. I think it was raised by the Honourable Chair of the Committee. And I thought we were going to allude to that so that we do see any linkages in terms of that, like the rural areas. The other one, my worry, which Honourable Steyn has picked up, although I raised it, is the issue of rented buildings or office space unutilized. It's a capital investment, but which is not supported by operational planning. And that's where the problem is. Then, has I raised the issue of the Audit and Risk Committee, its vibrancy. The other one, without undermining anyone, all board members are appointed based on their areas of specific and also qualification and the experience and everything. But in-house, do we have a deliberate capacity plan or training for board members?
or is there is also within the workforce, because also the compliance regulations changes all the time. We tend not to catch up with those things. And thank you, Chair, and I really thank the responses that I will be hearing from the other side of the table. Thank you.
Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much, Post Office, for your presentation. You know, Chair, sometimes it's nice to ask your questions after Honourable Steyn, because you'll be covered in most of your questions. So, unlike him, I won't repeat Honourable Steyn, because you have covered me in many instances. I won't even elaborate, because I think the response that you'll get, it will also cover me, Chair. But, you know, Chairperson, I don't know what is happening with the post office. It normally doesn't happen this way. It's for the first time since I came in 2009. I'm depressed as I am today because of a report from post office. They've always been, though they had challenges, but they've been among the shining stars of entities in DOC. There are those entities that we know that that one is trouble, but not a post office.
I like SAPC.
You know. So in that chair, that's why I want to join comments by Mama Spore, that really, to my side, or from my side, something is wrong somewhere, Chairperson. What is wrong? Because clearly we cannot have a depressing report like this. Not achieved, not achieved, not achieved, not achieved. It cannot be. That means there are problems. There are challenges. You must share with us so that we'll be able to help you. It is our responsibility as this portfolio committee. Our responsibility is not to whip you badly every day, no. We must also constructively help you to be able to walk again. But you'll only be able to do that if you are honest and say, these are the challenges that led to this, not that, because now that is my main worry. Not achieve, not achieve, not achieve. That is my main worry. What are the real issues that made you not to achieve? Because I think when you say this is our plan, obviously you might have done your research. You cannot put a plan in place, then you don't implement that plan. There must be something very serious that made you not to implement that plan. That is what I want. What is that thing that made your plan so unimplementable? Because to me now, you are heading for ICU. You are heading for ICU, and I don't want to see post office in the ICU. Help us to help you before you go to that situation. And I'm also tempted, Chair, to say, I think we must also have a separate report from post office to say, in all these challenges, the Auditor General, some of them might be minor, but to us they are not minor. You know, to be an employee by show of hands is not easy, because not we account somewhere. I mean, we cannot be doing oversight on you in this performance. There must be some sort of a report, Chair, to say, on all these challenges and not achieved, this is the program in place to deal with that. And that program must have time frames that maybe come the next report, we will be convinced. And there must be a political will, Chairperson, to say, as the board, we are also committed. Because that is another thing that might be lacking, Chair, if you go through this report. The board commitment, the participation of the board, the attendance of the board in meetings. What is happening? Something is not right somewhere, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to deal with this thing, Chair, of the ICU, because I see, I'm not a fortune teller, but I see the ICU coming. But Chair, nonetheless, I want to raise three issues that Honorable Stanley didn't cover. Firstly, around your 2010-2011 report, there was, and I think even in this current year review, there was about 40.7 million spent on learning and development interventions. And I remember, as this portfolio committee, we also requested the breakdown of that amount. How, where, to who, criteria in terms of provinces. We wanted the details. And I don't remember, Chair, for now, received any report detailing Ubuti, this is how the post office has spent that 40.7 million. I thought I'll hear that progress report or that request in this meeting. I didn't hear that. And on one of your slides, slide number 11, you talked about four mobile post offices for low density areas. Chair was right. If you speak, you don't know west, now you're in trouble. We went to Northwest, all regions. In particular, where I was deployed, it was Bupirima District Municipality. There were challenges, in particular in Taung. And the responses that we got by then, it was because of the same problem. We were told that because of low density, there is no way that there can be a post office. At least we'll assist with mobile post office. That was during oversight, Chair. I don't remember, is it 2010 or 2011? I can't remember. It was during an oversight. I also want a response. Well, these four mobile post offices, does it cover that area of Taung? Or those people are still disadvantaged like the past apartheid era, in this era that we are now? And as you are saying, maybe one out of these four covers them, then you are not talking to me if it's not part to that. And in terms of your report, page 48 on subsidiaries, you have established a logistics audit committee. But what I don't get clearly here is the terms of reference of this committee. Maybe if I can get that, I'll be able to come up with my question. But if I can get that, I don't think it will be necessary for me to ask anything about it. And on page 57, Honorable Shin asked a question in regarding to fraud. I think it's on common fraud. Unless maybe, Chair, I was outside. And if I was outside, I'll accept. But I didn't hear any response to that. I don't want to. I also have a question around that. But I think in responding to what Honorable Shin asked, then I'll be covered. I don't want to repeat what she said. It's around common fraud on the 79 incidents and the breakdown. I didn't hear it. Maybe I was outside or I was a little bit sleepy. On page 98, no, I think, let me leave this one. It's about the students to government programs. I think it's covered in terms of the 40.7 million share. And from page 99, on this format, I don't know, maybe it's me, Chair, where you said do not comply, if you can clarify what does that mean? Because there are many cross there on do not comply and on other areas without mentioning them. If you can just explain those do not comply, why are you not complying on those crosses there? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chairperson, CEO.
Chairperson, I will give it to the CEO and the team to respond to all the implementation questions. Then myself and the board members will deal with the issues which are related to the board.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would request with your permission to do the same thing in terms of allocation of responsibilities. Well, I will cover some of the matters. Firstly, just for the allocation, and then I will respond to the remaining questions. The CFO will cover the financial issues. Including the condition of expenses and issues around assets coming out of the audit committee. I will also, after my introduction in terms of respond, ask the head of IT, Bratton, just to cover an extended implementation of the works which have done within IT, particularly citing issues of risk in terms of what we have covered. I will also ask Ndala Minister to cover issues of rollout in terms of mobile, but also include Daum in terms of the area of response, in terms of what we have done. And then Susan, just to reiterate on the report around the spend on the lending by province, on the cost spend around training, more specifically to the areas where we have covered. Maybe also if the issue around fraud in the report you did, Susan, allude a little bit if there's some aspect which is outstanding. Before they respond, I just wanted to cover some few of the components of some of the questions. I would like to start by the investment in hybrid mail, and probably do a consolidation of thoughts around hybrid mail. Hybrid mail, in the main, it's a function of an extending of e-business. Given that, the benefit out of hybrid mail, first, it's not in the initial investment, but it's in the way we will do business. In other words, the component of cost which would have been incurred in transportation, region to region or province to province, is to be reduced, because the communication is an e-based one. So that's the benefit which we will incur. So whilst we will not see a positive out of the direct hybrid mail, we'll see a positive on the direct because of the costs associated with transport. The second component of that, which probably the head of e-business did not cover, is the technological advancement which goes beyond at the point where we now have decentralized regions, where we now look at what we do between the customer and the customer interface, given the technological changes which are currently at play. Because the full benefit thereof will be in that migration into where the customer have alternatives in receiving the information, not necessarily paper-based. So I do believe that would be the first phase of e-business value derivatives. Of course, the investment in the IT space is not as high as it will be on the fixed printing component. And that's where the benefits of hybrid mail will come to really show full fruition. I have to highlight, though, that the margins are not necessarily the same. So the volume has to be more higher to be able to match pound for pound the value derived from that. And if I miss something, I would, with the permission of the chair, ask for the next for the head to cover if I've left any of the gaps in there. However, in conclusion, in terms of the hybrid mail, at the moment we have three sites. And our objective by 2015 is to have around 7 sites. This is part of what we will then indicate as our growth path. The question around, do we have a positioning in terms of where we're going to go and how that volume will be qualified? It's on the basis of that migration first in terms of volume, and also at the point of the hybrid stations which we're planning to grow. I don't have the figure in terms of total investment which we're planning to do, but we can confirm just now in line with the comparable volume growth around hybrid main. The second component I would like to cover is around the targets in terms of number of outlets which we're growing. Part of the ICT review speaks to how do we provide similar services and how is the approach of the same targets which were set against the alternative way of reaching our customers. Our customers. The critical thing is that we have to look at alternative ways, not necessarily the standard methods as we are, primarily as bricks and mortar. To my presentation earlier on, we have highlighted that it is critical to look at alternatives, albeit the fact that the mobile unit which you've used may have not been acceptable, but alternative ways cheaper to reach out our communities is very, very critical for us to improve reach. We cannot necessarily look at 50, because if we were to take 50 and look at the gap, 10 per 1,000, 1 per 10,000, there's a lot of these to be developed. So alternative means is very critical. And that's where e-solution plays a very important role. If I may pause, Chairperson, and just ask the CFO to cover some of the issues, followed by Brighton, Dala, and Susan. Thanks, Chairperson.
Coming back to how we have performed for the year 2012-13, when you compare year to year, yes, the change is within the region of 300. But fortunately, the accounting standards that you use afford us to start on a clean slate every year when you look at your profit and loss. The cumulative figures come through your balance sheet, and that's where you see that progression. And maybe just to link up with one of the questions that were asked with relation to how was the loss funded. When you look through our financials, particularly going through the profit, the statement of, it's changed names, what we used to call income statement and what we used to call the balance sheet. When you look at the income statement, yes, we've posted that loss of 178. And when you go through the statement of changes of inequity, page 139, that's where you can see how that loss has been absorbed through our financials. For example, when you look at that column, speaking to retained earnings, you see how we compare from April 2011, 2012, March 2013, and that's where you'll see where that 178 comes in, and you see right at the end where we end, as far as retained earnings is concerned, we end at 1.5 billion. So that's where that loss sits, that 178, it sits much higher up, and we end up at that 1.5 billion rand. Now, speaking about how we have responded to the loss of subsidy, yes, we have responded rather late, but we also want to mention that all the efforts that have been seen on e-business and so forth and so on are to try and mitigate that risk that we're facing. We do have some very good turnaround as far as CFG is concerned that will see CFG grow over time. But we also need to take cognizance of the fact that before you can fully recover, you know, there is a period of a dip that you will take while you are putting processes in place. And while, and it's all important in how we then ensure that we don't go on a steady dip, but we find our way up. And these are all the things that we are putting in place. And when you look at the turnaround strategy, it particularly speaks on how we need to change our product mix. And that's very important, because the change in product mix says that we will see revenue grow as much as we become less dependent on the traditional mail and get to the more sophisticated stuff that we were talking about as far as e-business is concerned. And as far as our costs are concerned, yes, we do have a high salary bill. And I don't think it's a secret to anybody. What we are currently looking at, we are currently saying, if mail is declining, how do we then match the decline in mail with our salary costs? Because currently, our salary cost is very fixed. So we need to be moving more towards a variable form of salary cost so that we get control over the cost. Because if it's fixed, you don't have control. Now we are working on different models that are going to assist us in order to ensure that we have a more variable portion of salary costs. And yes, the mail business will tell you in detail how they do their crewing in order to determine the number of people that are needed. So those are all the things that we're working on. And of course, that's where the regulator comes in as well, because we need to look at how often do we deliver. Do we deliver 5 or 6 days a week? You know, those are some of the mixes that we need to do, and that's going to assist us in managing our costs, both employee and the transport costs, because those speak to how we perform our business. And those are the things that we are currently doing, and those are the things that are embedded in our turnaround strategy. A question that was asked, the question that was asked on irregular and condonation. Irregular expenses, because the contracts are awarded by different people. So if a contract is awarded by Post Office Exco, it will have to be condoned by Post Office Exco. If a contract is awarded by the board, it will have to be condoned by the board. If we were in a government department and we're sitting here with an over expenditure, that's the portion that's called unauthorized expenditure. And the unauthorized expenditure would have to be condoned here. The irregular is something slightly different, where we're talking on contracts. So there is a slight difference between the two issues. As far as fruitless is concerned, the fruitless has not been condoned. And we are currently investigating, because you only condone once you have completed your investigation. Treasury regulations dictate as follows. If in the event that you detect that an irregular expenditure or a fruitless and wasteful expenditure was committed by a certain individual, you move it from fruitless and wasteful or irregular into receivables, meaning you have to recover it from somebody. Now, the reason why the fruitless is not yet condoned is because we're still going through this process through the Financial Misconduct Committee. Asset management. We do have an asset register, and that's the reason why our assets were not qualified by the auditors. There were errors that were found in the asset register, which we are currently correcting. There were assets that were not found, and to date, what we have done is all those assets that were not found, we have gone through each business unit and worked with them to determine what is found and what's not found so that we can properly account. So that's what we're doing. As far as heritage assets are concerned, this is, and unfortunately, because we are using IFRS, IFRS does not have heritage assets. So for heritage assets, we'll have to borrow from grant. And that's what we're currently doing. Through philately, we are not going to establish a museum. We do have it with all our philately type stamps. So currently we're in the process of assessing the value of those assets so that we can correctly bring them into our asset register and account for them properly as per grant. I have answered on how the loss has been funded. Now, another question that has been asked twice now is on the loans, whether or not these are governed by a prescript. Because we are a state-owned company, we run under two types of laws, one being the PFMA and the other being the Companies Act. Now, when you go to the Companies Act, there's Section 45 of the Companies Act that allows for a holding company to give loans to their subsidiaries. And as far as our subsidiaries are concerned, we have applied for, we have used Section 45 of the Companies Act. And as far as impairment is concerned, now as a company, we also have a policy that determines our how we manage our receivables. Now, according to our policy, if a debt ages to, say, 90 days, we will then impair, say, about 10% of our debt, and so it goes up. So the longer the debt, it means for us that the likelihood of recovery is minimized. So because of that likelihood, we impair. Had we received the money timely, we would not impair it. But because it's now aged, that's how we get to impair it. The question was asked also on bonuses. How do we pay bonuses when we are performing this way? Now, we have substantive agreements with our unions. Now, our laborers who are, rather our employees who fall under the bargaining unit are entitled to 13 checks. And the amount that's seen here is the 13 checks that form part of the substantive agreement. Now, there were questions on some board issues. I shall not tamper into those and head over.
Through Chairperson, if Brighton could cover some of the developments around IT, and then Dala, and then Susan to cover if there's any elaboration on the 40.7 million spend. What I wanted to elaborate for the Chairperson is around the turnaround of CFG, which the question has been raised once again, or break-even of CFG. I have to confirm that the break-even component of CFG takes into account that we will have consolidated all the businesses with CFG. So, yes, it is correct to say that we have incurred a loss in the last year. We are looking at a break-even or small profit with consolidation of Speed Services Courier and all others into one single operation. Because the value will accrue in how we look at our business delivery model. If I can hand over to Brighton.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the IT risk that the Honourable Member has highlighted, first of all, I'll just like to inform the members that we're currently involved in an infrastructure refresh project, which is going very well, and it aims to replace all our legacy systems with new have, we are at 90% of the platform commissioning. However, just as a matter of urgency in order to address imminent risk in terms of within our IT environment, we have also taken certain measures to address that. The first measure that we have taken is we have engaged a service provider who does vulnerability scans 24/7 on our environment and ensures that any loopholes that are detected are highlighted and we can be able to address them immediately. That is currently going on. Secondly, we have also engaged on, in terms of our database security, on a project that will enable clear identification and audit trail in terms of database access and database management. That project is already has already been initiated. We also initiated a project to enhance our identity and access management through a single sign-on architecture, which will enable every user of our environment to be able to be traceable and to be able to be linked to Active Directory. The last portion in terms of dealing with IT risk really speaks to the availability of a disaster recovery site. I'm glad to say that we have made significant progress in terms of establishing a secondary site for disaster recovery, we should be able to have specifically disaster recovery for Postbank in the reasonable future to address particularly in the first instance the Postbank environment, but in the longer term the full SAPO IT systems. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. Currently, we are sitting with a shortfall of about 2,734 points of presence in terms of the latest population census of the country. We are working very hard to address the down area. We have identified three possible host businesses who are prepared to host an RPAs in that area. We also working on converting a fifth mobile unit, which once it's completed, if we're not successful in finalizing the arrangement with the possible host business, will be deployed to Taung. Like I've indicated, we're also sourcing another 5 units during this financial year, which will be deployed to the remaining provinces so that we cover some of the areas. And this process will continue in the near future to add more mobile units because we believe that it's much cost-effective to utilize mobile units in areas where the population doesn't justify a full-fledged post office, and the mobile unit can cover quite a number of villages than one post office, which might be maybe 20, 30 kilos away from some of the villages. Thank you.
I can comment then on the learning development question. Perhaps just to address two general things. It's firstly that we put together annually a workplace skills plan which we then derive from the development plans of our employees nationally, so that includes everybody on each level in the organization. And of course, then the next year we also report back in terms of our annual training plan, and report, sorry, to just say how we have done in terms of that delivery. So we are monitored by that, and we also, of course, get our grants according to what we have delivered on that. Our training programs is developed for all levels in our organization, and we have a very big focus in terms of our internal delivery on our business units that have got the large staff numbers. So our learning and development centers across the country actually then have employees that do the delivering of training for our business units specifically. So there's a very big focus then on the real output and the vocational training then for those people. We've got learning and development centers across the country, so if you ask whether people in the regions and head office and so on get a similar focus, yes, they do. We've got people sitting there. We also have deployed training centers or rooms to some of our area offices so that training could be closer to our people and that they don't always have to travel to our regional offices. I unfortunately don't have exact numbers in terms of the training, all collated training across each province. I have actually just checked some of it. I could see that it is really very similar. The amount spent on the regions is similar, so if I can prepare a detailed report after this conversation to show that, I would gladly do so. Then in terms of what do we spend it on, most of our training is actually focused on making sure that we comply or not, or assist the organization to meet the strategic objectives. So a lot of our training is focused on business-related requirements. We've spoken about something like our point-of-sale system earlier today, so that is typically one of the things that we would be doing. We are also currently spending quite a lot of our money on the fires compliance and the regulatory requirements. We've got, for instance, 600 people currently doing a BBA degree so that they can meet the minimum requirements for the specific job that they are in. We also have a lot of training then for specific skills programs. We have learnerships where we address people that are unskilled. Not all of them are own employees, even people outside our organization. And currently we've got 5 active learnerships that's running. We are also registering 2 learnerships for our people internally that will be part of our compliance requirements. So that has been acknowledged by the Financial Services Board, and that will of course address people in the business who are the front line facing the customers. So that is also the levels of people out there in the region. Well, other kind of trainings, I will just try and go over them very quickly. We have technology training, which is quite a big need currently, and there we also have a few CSI programs that we do to expand digital literacy, not only to our own employees, but also outside our organization. And then we've got personal development initiatives, things like induction and also a personal mastery workshop that we are presenting as part of that process. We do management and leadership training. We have, for instance, a very specific program that we do for our supervisors to assist them in terms of their skills and the management that they have to have. We've got specific RPL programs that we do to make sure that we can sign off people in terms of the experience relating to qualifications. And then, of course, there's conferences, seminars in terms of continuous professional development for certain categories of employees. I'm not sure if you need more detail, then I would gladly prepare a detailed report to be sent through.
I think there was a question, there were 2 questions that I missed. One was on page 99 to what? 104. That's the Global Reporting Initiative Framework. And I think we need to just put context to it so that we understand. We are driving towards being towards reporting on sustainability as the global companies are reporting. And this year was our very first year that we started reporting on it and gathering information on it. And we took this framework as is. We didn't customize it to ourselves so that it can speak more to what post office is doing. Now, there are some indicators here that you read. One can clearly see that they are definitely not meant for the post office. You know, for example, when you look at page 102, HR 1 and HR 2, percentage and total number of significant investment agreements and contracts that include clauses, memorandum, human rights concerns. When we contract, and because we are also using treasury regulations as far as supply chain is concerned, there's no way in there that says we need to look at human rights concerns. So from where we're sitting, currently we're not complying with that because we are not regulated that way. So maybe what we can do going forward is to look at this report and customize it to be what SAPO does so that we can all understand. Now, there was also a question on the overdraft. We have a total of 80 million rands that has been approved with various banks, the largest being with Standard Bank, which is our banker, approved at 50 million. So the cumulative number approved is 50 million rands. As reporting date, 2012-13, we had not used the overdraft facility at that point. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Before I hand over to the Chairperson, there's one question which probably we have not covered. It's around the cost of rental. At the moment, the cost of rental due to the post offices, which are under serviced, is sitting at about 400 million. The total cost of rental exceeding what we receive is sitting at 400 million. The bulk of that is contributed to the underserviced post offices. At this point in time, we are looking at our total portfolio of property. We have got a project underway where we're looking at to assess the total portfolio in terms of the status, the work which needs to be done to bring the property status to in where is not compliant to OSH, to a compliance level. Also, to begin to prepare what the needs will be for Postbank within a retail element. So that is the work which we're busy with at the moment to get to a point where we have a project plan which will deal with this correction. At the same time, we are also looking at alternatives on how we would look at the portfolio as a value add to the organization. And then finally, we're also looking at what funding requirements will be going forward to enable us in delivering the outcome of the exercise which we are currently working on.
Before the chairperson of the board, just page 57 has nothing to do with the board. The breakdown of the 79, the 23% increase on common fraud, and how are you intending to address that? And you also registered 73% loss. Page 57. It was first asked by Honorable Sheen. I asked a follow up on it. Did not respond on that day. Or should I rephrase it? Do you want me to ask it again? Because I don't like repeats, but if you want me to repeat again.
No, apologies, Honorable Member.
You don't like the generation repeat. Okay, that's fine.
Apologies. I had. Susan, if you can cover it as part of the report of the financial misconduct. Oh, well, Susan is the group exec acting in responsible for HR.
And this Susan is a member of the portfolio committee.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
I'm
not sure if it has been the question that I've answered while you were not here, ma'am. It was about the misconducts and also the fraud and the investigations in the organization. So what we have there is that in terms of the investigations, we had 606 people who were investigated. And out of those 606 people, 82% of them were also reported through to the South African police, which is 494 people. And out of all of those cases, we had about between a 15 and a 17% dismissal, depending also some of the CCMA cases that have been, or that is pending, that we are awaiting outcome. And the highest reasons for all of these investigations are gross negligence, fraud, and cash shortages. And specifically for the fraud, we focus also on financial misconduct and specifically also reporting on that to the Financial Services Board, making sure that anybody that is dismissed for that reason will be registered with them. And we have also put in place certain actions, which I would just quickly then run through again. One of them is a subcommittee to look after financial misconduct. We also have updated our policies around misconduct and disciplinary hearings. Then we also have our ethics committee that oversees some of these for us, and the Crime Buster Hotline, as well as a fraud prevention plan.
Chairperson, thank you. As far as the board issues are concerned, I will ask my colleagues to respond to specific issues. As I've introduced them, we do have a chairperson of the audit committee with us, and we do have the chairperson of the risk committee with us, and as well as the chairperson of the procurement task team. So I will ask them to respond to the issues related to that, then I will respond to the rest of the general board issues, starting with the procurement task team chairperson to respond to your task team and the terms of reference and what you have been doing, whether you are awarding tenders or not.
Honorable chairperson and honorable members, thank you for the opportunity to respond to the questions that were posed by Honorable Steyn that relate to the procurement task team. I think he asked about five questions, and if I may actually reduce them, it is the why, who, and what, and when, the procurement task team. I will start by explaining to the honorable members the reason and the background why the procurement task team was established. It was established because I think you would have actually picked up in the annual report that when we were appointed, we were faced with a number of challenges that related to irregular expenditure, irregular contracts, over and above the other issues that we faced with. It was in that light that the board then established the procurement task team. The question then would be, were we within our mandate to establish such a committee or task team? Yes, we were. We used our legal prescripts. In this instance, it was our memorandum of articles that prescribed that we can set up a particular task team to address a particular issue at a point in time as a board. Who constitutes the task team? The task team is constituted by the chairperson of the Post Bank Committee, the chairperson of CFG, the chairperson of risk, the chairperson of IT steer committee of the board. All of these are board members. What is the role in terms of this task team? Really, it was really set up to assist the board in intricately looking at what is causing the irregular contracts which were over, and currently we're actually, we've reduced the contracts. There were over 600 at the time when the task team was actually established. I'm not going to highlight all the terms of reference. Suffice to say that the terms of reference were presented to the board, approved by the board. Was the intention to replace an internal process of procurement and cross-functional sourcing team? No, it was not the intention. Like any other board committee, the task team is an advisory task team to the board. It does not have the powers to cancel, award, or approve. It advises the board. We have moved in relation to the duration of the task team. Given what I have said, clearly it is not a standing committee of the board. It has a duration. To that extent, we have moved to appoint a service provider to assist us in relation to the irregular contracts that have actually cited, and getting an external service provider to actually come through and assist the board in that regard. I think those were the questions that were related to the procurement task team. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson of Procurement Task Team, Chairperson of Audit Committee, your comments.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I think there are six questions related to the Audit Committee. Page 67, King 3, the Audit Committee had a vacancy. That was one question. The second one was the asset management, which the CFO answered. The third one was the Internal Audit Committee and the quality of management reports. The fourth one was, I had a question to the Chair, can we state the exactly how the losses were funded? The fifth one was, is the Risk and Audit Committee alive? And the sixth one was the terms of reference for the Logistics Audit Committee. I can answer the first question. In terms of the Audit Committee, my position, I, under the old memorandum and articles, I was an independent chair of the Audit Committee. At the last AGM, the shareholder appointed me a director and a temporary chair of the Audit Committee. I hope that answers the first question. The second one, the asset management was answered by the CFO. The third one, the quality of the management reports. The internal audit report consists of 110 pages. Very difficult to read, very difficult to understand, and we have an ongoing process where we meet with the chair of the audit, of the internal audit executive, to explain to them how to simplify the reports so that it could be understood by the board as well as by the executives. And there's a program of action that's now been set up so that we can monitor the reasons why the internal audit reports are getting longer, why they're not getting shorter, what are the reasons for it. And if I can just summarize, the reasons relate mainly to the IT problems, which relate to Postbank, and when Postbank is fully incorporated and IT problems are resolved, 80% of the internal audit matters would be resolved. So that's a question of the quality of the internal audit reports. Can we state directly how we funded the losses? Yes, we can. The CFO alluded to it in the financials, but essentially we use all our cash reserves to fund the loss. And that is a problem that we reported to the board. It's a problem that we have to look at. It's a problem we have to manage for the future. And as the honourable member has said, one member has said earlier, she's distressed about the financials. I hope end of next year she's not going to be more distressed. And then, is the Risk and Audit Committee alive? Yes, we are. The previous shareholder has requested that we monthly, the previous minister had requested that we send monthly reports to the DOC in terms of the status of the audit report. This has given the Audit Committee the power to really ask the executives for the reasons for the increase in the audit matters, why it is increasing and not decreasing. So that has been a tool that the Audit Committee could use to directly get explanations from management to assess it so we could report to the board. And then lastly, the terms of reference of the Logistics Audit Committee, it's similar to that, it's almost the same as that of SAPO, in that it's a standard audit charter, and essentially it consists of ensuring its proper governance, proper financial reporting, proper internal controls, and proper compliance with all legislation, and we'll make make certain that the copy of the terms of reference be sent to the honourable member. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues, for the responses. With regard to the IT governance, the chairperson of the the chairperson of the IT committee is not here with us today, but I can assure the committee that yes, we are providing the appropriate governance in terms of the King 3 prescript and the programs which was outlined by the acting executive of the IT under the oversight of the IT steering committee. With regard to the investigations on corruption, the main investigation which covers multi-year is the one which was instituted by the shareholder, and that is the report which we are waiting for to be given to us so that we can be able to look at it and take action with regard to the recommendations. But on a daily basis with regard to the fraud and corruption, the report which you heard from the executive is what the board is expected to provide oversight on, and we require that report and the actions taken against the people responsible. With regard to the training of the members of the board, yes, there is a program which the members of the board are trained on various aspects, be it governance issue, financial management, and so on, and quite a number of the board members have gone through the training in order to capacitate them. Now the big question is, what are the challenges related to the commitment of the board in dealing with the situation which is leading us to go to ICU? Chairperson, I would like to indicate that the highlights which I presented at the beginning of the meeting are part of the inherent challenges the South African Post Office is faced with around financial sustainability issues. What is it that the board can do to turn the post office around to be a sustainable institution? That's what occupied the activities of the board, to look at means and ways. And at the end of the day, that's how we produced and started implementing the turnaround strategy. Secondly, the issue around the capacity of the board in terms of the numbers. We had board members who have retired and they were supposed to be replaced. The previous shareholder was in the process of beginning to replace, then there was change of shareholders, and the current shareholders has moved speedily in that regard to try and fill the vacant post. And I'm quite sure that by the end of the month that would have been dealt with. I don't have to repeat the issues around the irregular expenditures, because that has been attended to. So those together were the issues which are challenging the board. And we are quite conscious of the fact that if we don't do anything about the situation, we'll end up in the ICU. Hence, we have activated even the turnaround strategy without, you know, consulting everyone else. We consult as we implement, so that we prevent the issue of getting into a financial crisis of that. With the commitment of the board, I would say, Chairperson, the board is very, very committed. If you can look at the sacrifices the board has made in terms of the meetings, even though we are half capacitated, we were taking the workload of the entire board and run with it. And at the moment, I think we are really on course in terms of that. So the commitment is there, and we are committed to see the post office. Although it's a Titanic, we are committed to see it turn around. Chairperson, that concludes our session of questions.
Yeah, or Titanic, ICU. No, thanks very much, Chairperson, and the CEO in leading the responses from members. You could see members that didn't raise their hands. So I asked. assume that their question had been responded to. It might be not to their satisfaction, but they have been responded to their question. But probably, I think at one point, Honorable Tsebe and Stein, started by Honorable Mrutwa, raised the matter. Whether are we focusing at the right issue to deal with? Whether the policy framework, as it were in 1998, still stands as we speak today. But at least that process probably will be answered by the policy review, which is going on, which, taking from your comments, it will seem you are participating in that particular process, because sometimes you'll find that we are trying to patch something which is not patchable. The reality is how it has been designed that is no longer probably fitting at a particular moment, a particular time. For you to be able to deal with it, you must go back from the where it started and the ideas at that time, whether they're still the same where you are and so on. Probably those things will help us in terms of moving forward. Honorable Mrutwa dealt with it into details, and also the comparison with other countries in terms of their approach to post office and how do they want to take it forward and so on. Probably we're at that point as a country that we need to relook in terms of the fundamentals, the basics which we had at a particular time. But like I'm saying, that probably the policy review, not probably, it should be able to come up with a new policy direction in terms of how to deal with the issues, the postal issues and so on. So I hope that we'll deal with that. But the second issue is just probably we need to ensure that your decapacitating, tated situation is corrected. By the current minister to appoint the board of directors, which they're supposed to be appointed. Because again, if that does not happen, all what the members are raising and your responsibility to perform your fiduciary duties, it won't be possible. Because the check and balances will be, line will be crossed. Because you'll find one board member doing almost two or three issues. Instead of sitting back and look at the other committees, what they are doing and try to assist, but you'll be involved in almost all of them. So it becomes difficult how objective you become sometimes in terms of dealing with those things. So I hope that the appointment of those processes will assist to give the full strength of the board to be able to do those things. I think those are the issues which probably need to be taken forward. But I appreciate the point members have raised it, that probably there seems to be the lacking in terms of developing a strategy in terms of how to deal with the issue of the subsidy one and the other things, because probably in a nutshell for us as a committee, the shareholder or the minister should be able at one point to clarify the direction of the post office. Where is it heading to? As a shareholder, what exactly is shareholding? Heading to where exactly? I think the clarity is needed even from the shareholder point of view. Otherwise, if that clarity does not come there, I always make an example with the Post Bank. That you see, when you started Post Bank, all of us, we thought we were going from A to B. But A, as you proceed, you will see that A, you might not even go to B, C, you might go from A to F, which you never intended to go to originally. You would thought you go to B, but you might finally go to F because of the circumstances and so on, as will you progress to deal with that. But I think those are the issues which are key. Of course, members, they've raised the critical issues which link to your day-to-day activities and so on. But indeed, Chair, it will be shocking that you've got an organization more than 600 irregular contracts. Honorable Zabe was saying, hey, it's depressing ICU. Hey, what is distressing is that we didn't know about all the time, about these contracts that were irregular. So all the time we didn't know for the first time that it come up that, hey, you're having a problem here. You might see this thing being nice, but it's cracking underneath. It's a matter of time that it's going to collapse. Because it will seem when it comes to us, it was well dressed in such a way that you cannot see the cracks. Because really, if more than 600 irregular contracts in an organization like post office, and they've been presenting annual report to us for how many times? Many times. And we never knew about that. And so on. I would think that it was a great thing that the board did to deal with those issues and so on. So we have to compliment the board in terms of the work which they've done to be able to unravel some of the things and be seized with and so on. Of course, it will always be difficult for some of those things. They are not easy to deal with and so on. But we have to compliment you as a board, probably as a committee, that we have managed to deal with those things and so on. All what we must say is just to keep up the good work. We hope that the executives which you have, they will fully support the ideals of the board in terms of where you want to take the entity to the direction and so on. Otherwise, thanks very much. Members, they've requested certain information. Honorable Sir, we talk about the information of breakdown in terms of training. We were talking about the training breakdown in terms of where exactly what. Probably that's what you need to look into. Members also have said categorically clear. Can you give us your program in terms of dealing with the audit findings and so on? This is our program which we are going to implement moving forward to limit the audit findings and the other things. So hopefully if we can get those documents which members have requested so that for us is that when you deal with that, also break it into quarters and so on, so that we know exactly is your program, but what are you intending to do when, so that it does not become a broader program, because it will be difficult to be monitored by the members and so on. But we are saying that, being mindful on the issues raised by Honorable Murutwa, that probably we need to revisit the bigger scheme of things in terms of policy, where we want to go and so on, around the issue of post office or and related services. Otherwise, thanks very much. Members, Chairperson and CEO, you are supposed to have tea at 3. I thought you were finishing, and the time was running until I realized that it's late. Even if we break, it would be better to finish and then go for the tea rather than breaking and reconvening for tea and so on. But otherwise, thanks very much. Members, we're meeting tomorrow at V454 at 9:30, dealing with the program of action for DOC. Or I'm told that it will be here. There seems to be the change of venue. We might be here even tomorrow. The meeting for tomorrow, members, is here. It's no longer V454. We are here. Thanks very much, everyone. Enjoy tea.